Netcasting from Chicago, Los Angeles, and Sydney, you're listening to this week's FX Podcast from FXGuide.com.
Hi, and welcome to this, our last podcast from SIDGRAPH 2013. I'm Mike Seymour, and I'm the only one left standing. The other guys have had to go back for PhD business in one case, and of course Jeff back to his main job, which is Jeff is of course a full-time senior compositor. But I'm still here, or at least I'm almost still here. I'm bugging out. It's Thursday, and I just wanted to give you the last of our show rundowns. I know a lot of you have been really enjoying these, so thank you for all the feedback that we've got. We really do appreciate it. Coming up later in this show, we're going to follow up on something from the first report we did, which was a written online day zero report from DigiPro, with some stuff that we actually saw in the flesh. And in fact, this is what I guess would be I'd describe as my pick of the show. So there's a lot of stuff that people are talking about at the show, but I have to say this was probably one of the most popular things. It was a really good collision of multiple interests to me, real-time stuff, RenderMan stuff, Katana stuff, but it isn't the thing that we were talking about earlier in the week on one of the earlier podcasts, so I'll explain that all in a minute. So some other stuff finishing up for this show. Last night, I certainly went to the RenderMan 25th party or the user group meeting, and that was one of the things we wrote up and put up on FX Guide. So if you haven't seen that, we've got an amazing interview. We got tremendous access in the weeks and months leading up to the show to put that together. We have an interview with Ed Catmull. Part of that, we got to speak to Lauren Carpenter, but a whole lot of the other people, and that's a big story up on FX Guide as a written piece. In terms of the show, there is, on the last day, a bunch of really good presentations, including some really interesting stuff about games companies are now adopting more physically based shaders and LiDAR procedures, as well as, you know, the full galaxy of the other sort of types of talks that go on. But I would say it felt like there were more rendering talks going on today, and there were some really good and interesting ones in that, and of course, electronic theatre. I also wanted to flag some emerging tech stuff. We didn't really got to emerging tech and in this discussion with you guys, but we have been doing some other stuff that will appear elsewhere. One of the things that I found really interesting is that University of Southern California has a 72 projector-based, what looks like a holographic display. So if you imagine walking up to something, it looks like a 3D display, but doesn't have stereo glasses. It's called an auto-stereo projector array. And basically, you've got a guy's face that just looks completely like a very hardcore 3D image, and it's actually being put together by actually having 72 Texas Instrument Pico projectors illuminating a 30 by 30 panel. So what you're getting is, as you walk around it, effectively you're seeing different projectors or one of the 72 projectors from whatever angle you're going at. So it looks like a screen, though it's more about the size of a piece of US letter paper or A4 if you're in my country. And that's got this face. It's very vivid, very interesting, can be animating or do whatever you like because it's just coming from projected images. But of course, you'd have to film whatever you're doing with the same kind of degree angle. So it works very well for a face because you can do a wraparound on it. And then it's life-size in the room that you're standing and looking at it. But I've got to say, it was really interesting. It just sort of looked like a holographic projection. And if that face came up and you could somehow film that in a sci-fi show, you'd be, well, there you go. There's a holograph that the actors can actually interact with. Though I don't think you'd be bothering to go to this much trouble just to have something for the actors. But because it's only using the Pico projectors, it's actually an attainable technology. It's not like some kind of dumbass thing that, you know, you'd never be able to build or never be able to afford to do. So I can imagine it being used maybe in some kind of theme park or whatever. But that's one of the more interesting things I saw over at Emerging Tech. And I'll try and put a photo up of that, but it's really hard, of course, to show a holographic display in a still picture. But what I'm going to show is a sort of a sample of a bad, I guess, out of focus of what the face is looking like. But in focus behind, you'll get a hint at those 72 projectors with all these little beams of light feeding in that one master image. Well, let's now go to that interview that I was talking about before, which is with Andy Lomaz, the product manager of Katana. But I need to sort of set this up because earlier in the podcasting series from SIDGRAPH, we did this thing about RenderMan now being part of Katana. This is nothing to do with that. We recorded this right after Andy Lomaz had watched himself the demo on the NVIDIA booth. Now, this is a Katana demo in the sense that it's built on the basis of Katana, or I guess on the platform of Katana. But what's really interesting is the real-time renderer, which is the thing that I flagged in a written piece on Saturday called DigiPro 2013 Day Zero. And the DigiPro piece had my recounting of Tony DeRose presenting this sort of research stuff. And in that, tells you how time flies, in that he gave some stats, which I quoted in the article, right, because I thought they were kind of interesting, that this idea, if you could get a renderer kicking out rays at around 30 million rays a second, you'd be able to get something that a lighter could light with, and you could sort of see through the noise to very quickly and almost instantaneously sort of see what it is that you're looking at as you move the camera around, turn lights off and on. And they were saying that they were getting about 100 million rays a second. I learned today that at Emeryville they're looking currently at least 350 million. They have it working now without displacement, and that is something they're working on. But more imminent, I think, from what I could gather from talking to some of the guys after the presentation, is they're soon going to have subsurface scattering and fur. So clearly this is being set up to do a proper character-based pipeline. But none of this is in production, and this renderer is not RenderMan. This is a real-time GPU renderer coming out of the research group that Tony's team is doing, which is based down in Emeryville, not the Seattle RenderMan team, and certainly nothing to do with that package deal we were talking about earlier with Katana. So this isn't something you can buy. This isn't even something that Pixar is using in production. It's something that Pixar is looking to move into production as they solve a couple more of these issues. And the Katana team didn't know about it till very long ago, and certainly only got a phone call apparently like a month ago saying, hey, can we get a node lock license for NVIDIA because we want to show this at SIDGRAPH? And they were all like, wow, okay, that sounds pretty interesting. And you could see on the Foundry's faces of people that were seeing this demo, they themselves were just stunned at what their own software was basically showcasing or showing. And it really was remarkable. I just got to sort of give you a mental picture, and I'm sure they will release some videos soon, but imagine you're loading up a scene. It is going to take some time to load a scene. I'm talking like 30 seconds, maybe 45 seconds or something, which is nothing in the world of, you know, a year or two ago, you might have a lighter who would spend half an hour to an hour loading a large file. But with the help of Katana and the way that these guys are set up, these are production assets that they're loading. And, you know, you can do a demo, and there were some terrific 4K demos done with sort of game-like approaches where you're rigging the assets to be able to perform in the environment that you're in. You obviously get real-time performance from a game from picking your battles. But this isn't that, right? This is the opposite. This is grabbing production assets from Monsters University that are designed primarily and sort of entirely for the purpose of just producing high-quality images and not to some demo. So it was refracting. It had teapots. You could zoom in on the teapots and see a reflection of the whole room. You could get refraction through glass chandeliers and stuff. It was just remarkable. And once it was loaded and in, it was a matter of just moving, and the screen seemed to almost immediately refresh. Now, it kind of gets noisy when it first refreshes and then quickly goes, but as they've hit this way past this 30 million mark, it does. It's like a beat rather than move, wait, I can't see what's going on. Okay, now I move. It didn't seem unresponsive. And this allows you just to turn lights off and on, see what they're doing. You know, he said, I'll turn all the lights off apart from the door. Oh, wait, the screen was like really dark. And I thought, oh, well, that's taking a look. Oh, it's not that. It's just that I'm facing the wrong way. And just immediately pan around. And sure enough, there's a door almost closed with a slit of light on the other side of it that's just illuminating the other end of the room that we're in. And that was the contribution from the outside world. It was just remarkable to see. Anyway, I was watching Andy Lomas enjoying this, obviously almost as an outsider, because he wasn't part of this presentation in any way, just sitting a couple of seats away from me. And I grabbed him and thought we should have a chat about it, because it really is phenomenally interesting. Here's now that interview recorded earlier today.
Andy, we just walked out of a demo on the NVIDIA booth. Can you explain what we were looking at?
We were seeing some Pixar research work into using a GPU renderer, research renderer they've been working on, basically working together with Katana. So you're basically moving things, lights around, moving the cameras around, and seeing really, really fast results on actual production level scenes.
Yeah, we commented on this after we heard Tony DeRosa's talk on Saturday, and he showed a CAN demo of this in the sense that it was a video.
Yeah.
But obviously, incredibly well-respected researcher. But I kind of got the impression almost that it caught the Foundry off guard with how impressive this was.
I think that's pretty true. So there's lots of ideas we've been thinking about. It's almost like, how do you practically use GPU stuff, particularly with production data, where often the issue is like, okay, you know, I can load game set things where, you know, you're doing a game and you've built geometry, you've built textures, things like that, deliberately to fit well within the GPU. But production data is different. Production data is going to be so much bigger, so many more models, so many more textures. And the big things they're saying is that they were having data sets, things like 6 gigabyte data sets, but then they had a processing that, decimating that, to get it onto the GPU. 6 gigabytes, but you know, talking about data sets that you can't just say, hey, that model's already ready. And then once they're doing that, then the results are just, it's interactive to a level that I think changes the art.
You know? Yeah, so let's just set the stage, people. What we're seeing is, if you've seen the movie Monsters University, they're loading like a bedroom set or a living room set, and that set, as you say, takes a few moments to load,
yeah, mm-hmm,
because it is production data. Mm-hmm. At the moment, that has no displacement, though I understand, yeah, they are working on fur and subsurface. Mm-hmm. But the important thing here is, and what everyone's so excited about, is inside the context of Katana, which is obviously, we'll talk about a bit more, they are allowing a lighter to turn off and on lights,
mm-hmm, yep,
move the lights and move the camera around, and basically in what feels like, you know, a heartbeat, mm-hmm, you've got something that you can clearly see what's going on, and within,
absolutely,
a breath,
yep,
you've got something that's looking pretty darn good.
Yeah.
Now, I want to also clarify, this is not the same thing that we talked about earlier in the week with RenderMan coming with Katana, because, yep, these are two separate Pixar things. You want,
absolutely,
to just explain that?
Yeah, this is a research project. I think it's currently pure research, almost like thinking of the future at Pixar. So it's using the same scene data as they used for Monsters University, but it's a completely different renderer.
Right, so the deal, yeah, with Katana coming with the RenderMan license,
yeah,
is not the one we're talking about now.
This is future,
yeah,
technology,
yeah,
but really, really interesting technology. I think being able to see, you know, not just placement of a specular, placement of like broad shadow, but you're actually seeing really the interaction of the light with all the multiple bounces, global illumination stuff, interactively moving it around. So you can, you know, basically it was sort of like moving the light, you can see how it moved across the bedspread, moved around the light, and how it reacted to everything in the room. It was grainy at first, but you could see it instantly. And I think that just changes how you work, changes,
yeah,
how you
the
light.
Number that we quoted from Tony's research on Saturday was at about 30 million rays a second, an artist can see through the noise.
Yep.
They're at 100 million here. They're saying that they're doing 300 back at the, mm-hmm, the lab. Now, this, again, isn't part of the RenderMan team. This is a research project, but it also is fitting inside Katana. But let's join those dots,
yep,
because the other deal I'm referring to is the fact that Katana now ships with a copy of RenderMan, and the details of that deal are more complicated than I just implied, but it is, in fact, at no extra cost from the current price of Katana.
For the first 10 licenses, yeah,
yes,
it doesn't,
okay,
make it that clear.
Yeah. Yeah. But notwithstanding that, so that is one deal. This is, as I say, another research project. But what I wanted to get across was this idea that the Foundry and Pixar are actually working together more than just they're giving away a license free.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's there's obviously a lot I can't talk,
sure,
about, but the whole thing was saying this is, as we've talked about, a strategic collaboration. And it's with Pixar, not just the RenderMan team, but with the people in Emeryville, the people actually doing the film work. So there's obviously some things we can talk a bit about now that they're publicly revealing that Katana was used on Blue Umbrella and things like that. And basically we are working together with Pixar as a whole to basically push Katana and RenderMan together forward to make awesome lighting tools, really.
So one of the things that Katana, if we can swing to it for a second, when it was first introduced and it migrated to the Foundry, we talked about this idea that, a lighter could sit there literally and have two computers, one to load up a file while they worked on the other one. And,
mm-hmm,
and a lot of the data management side of things, so we don't want to just imply this is some kind of lighting thing, is what Katana's strong at. Are there significant advances happening in that side, mm-hmm, of the equation now?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's probably one of the biggest things we're actually working on, and this is one of the biggest we're working on together with Pixar. Basically, one of the biggest in Katana is the idea that we can be completely uncompromising about how much scene data we can deal with, how much we can actually get through to the renderer. The idea is that scene complexity shouldn't be a problem. You should still be able to light with it. You should still be able to work with it. Pixar used Katana Blue Umbrella and came back to us with a lot of things saying, we really, really like this, but there's some things which we think you want to work on. And that dovetailed really closely with a lot of the engineering work that we've been working on together with Sony actually for quite a long time. And this is a big, big project, almost like trying to take Katana to the next generation.
Is that work that is still going to be effectively render agnostic?
Yes, absolutely. It's changing how Katana calculates all this scene data. So utterly render agnostic. It's just how, when the user changes things, when the user modifies things, when the user's working with a scene, how do we calculate what that does? What's the effect of that? to actually deliver, then deliver the data to through to the renderer.
Because in Sony, you have obviously a key Arnold client, even though it's their own version of Arnold, and obviously in Pixar, you have a key RenderMan client.
Absolutely.
But it remains pivotally important, I assume, that you can operate with any renderer inside this.
Absolutely. So this is just going to deliver the same, almost like structure scene data, but in a much, much more modern, efficient way.
Okay.
So that, you know, to be honest, even all your renderer plugins for renderers should still work almost exactly the same without changing any code. You probably would want to change things to make them a bit more efficient, but things should still just work. It should just be that you can interact with much bigger data sets much more efficiently.
Right, because in fact that's the hallmark, if we go back since it's the 25th anniversary of RenderMan, the thing that defined the RenderMan spec in the first place is it bypassed the problems of saying, well, this is what I can do with available memory, and thus opened the door to doing incredibly complex scenes, and has ever since.
Yeah.
And so it, to a certain extent, that's Katana's strength as well, right? I mean, Katana
I hadn't thought about it that way, but yeah, absolutely.
Give me a really big data set.
And in some ways, there's some very common things there. The idea of RenderMan originally was, I potentially only need to hold a single triangle in memory, and I can then, but I can deal with an unlimited number of triangles.
Yes.
Render everything I ever saw, approach. And almost, that's quite actually a very good analogy for how Katana works, because our philosophy is you don't need to load the whole scene. All we need to have is this recipe for, so that if you can calculate any bit of the scene as you need it on demand, and we give that recipe to the renderer, you can deal with effectively an unlimitedly complicated scene.
Delayed loading.
So actually, it's almost exactly the same philosophy.
Yeah, it is.
Yes, I hadn't actually thought of it that way, but that's actually really good.
So just give me a quick rundown of where we are in version numbers. Like, what are we at with Katana, and when are we going to see the next?
So we're almost at the final beta on 1.5.
Yeah.
The release candidate's due out next week. The main changes in that is how you actually implement a renderer into Katana, also support for a lot more RenderMan features like hierarchical instancing and geometric lights, things like that. So that should be, that's out very soon. And the big, big change is this big re-engineering project, say we're doing at present with Sony, which I'm not going to give you a date on that one, but it's deep in progress at present.
So just tell me this, though. Is this the sort of thing that I might see in alpha by next SIDGRAPH, or before then?
I would hope before then.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for talking to us. Appreciate it.
Great. Thank you.
Okay, well, that's it for our coverage of SIDGRAPH 2013. It's been really terrific. I want to thank everyone that's been commenting on Twitter and coming up to us, and a lot of people, especially FX PhD members, have come up to us at the show and sort of said hi. We, really appreciate it. You know, I've got this job because of the stuff I did with you guys or whatever it is. And we just love it to death. And I just can't thank you guys enough. And also want to thank all the hardcore FX Guide Insider people who have been coming and pointing out they just feel like they can't get that kind of information anywhere else. We live for that kind of stuff. It's just great to get that kind of feedback. So thank you so much. That's it for me. I'm Mike Seymour on behalf of Jeff, who is hard back at work, and John, who is also hard back at work, and me. I'm just sitting here getting ready to get on a flight to Sydney. Thank you so much. And especially want to thank the Sydney production team who have been putting these podcasts together. Jim and Ian have been taking over for me, so I've been handing the baton to them every night at around 6 or 7. They edit them up and get them ready to get out for the next morning. So that's just been a terrific workflow. So thanks so much, guys. Thank you for being a part of this. And hopefully you've enjoyed our coverage. Until next time, I'm Mike Seymour. See ya.
Please let us know if you have any suggestions for stories or future podcasts. You can reach us by clicking the Contact Us link at the top of the homepage. This podcast is copyright FX Guide, LLC. Broadcast or redistribution is prohibited without the expressed written consent of FX Guide.